This week on Making Contact.
I don't want to be treated like a terrorist. I'm a man, I have human rights. I'm the country who's supposed to be the country of freedom. The freedom land, and it's not.
This is part of the Bush administration's really attack on civil rights, and immigrants are the first target.
Civil libertarians and immigrant rights advocates charge that the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service, in collaboration with other government agencies, has been stripping away the civil liberties of Middle Eastern immigrants in the name of the so-called war on terrorism. On this edition of Making Contact, correspondents Sarah Olson and Pauline Bartolone examine the treatment of immigrants under new INS policies and practices. We also address whether the rights of U.S. citizens are under threat as well. I'm Philip Babbitt, your host this week on Making Contact, an international radio program seeking to create connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. Sarah Olson begins our report.
In the wake of the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, Congress passed the USA Patriot Act, the Border Security Act, and the Homeland Security Act. The president has signed an executive order that authorizes military tribunals for non-citizens accused of terrorism, and another order that criminalizes the giving of material support to terrorist organizations. Additionally, the Department of Justice has issued regulations that close courtrooms to the public, allow secret hearings, seal court records, and override immigration judges' decisions on whether to release a detainee. The Department of Justice also authorizes the Immigration and Naturalization Service to hold immigrants indefinitely and without charges. INS detainees have been denied their right to counsel, refused access to a telephone, and in other ways they have been degraded and humiliated. All this has been done under the auspices of the War on Terror. Howard Zinn is an author and historian.
The word terrorism and the phrase national security have become the excuses for depriving Americans of their constitutional rights, non-citizens and citizens. Non-citizens are supposed to have constitutional rights too, as well as citizens. But with the new regulations in effect, with the new so-called Patriot Act, with the new regulations of the Immigration Naturalization Service, people who are non-citizens are being picked up, are being detained with no constitutional rights, very often not allowed to see anybody, not allowed to see a lawyer, not allowed to see their family, and they can be detained indefinitely as long as the government decides to detain them. And citizens are now, with this new program, going to be subject to the invasion of their privacy in the most detailed way. And citizens are going to have to worry about who looks at their purchases they make on credit cards, who looks at their emails, who listens to their telephone calls, who goes to the library and monitors the books that are taken out. And this is the kind of thing that happens in a totalitarian state. It's not the kind of thing that happens in a democracy. In other words, we are losing whatever democratic rights we have had in the past, in the present situation, and all justified by a so-called war on terrorism, which is accomplishing nothing against terrorism.
While stipulations in the USA Patriot Act have made it possible for the INS to detain immigrants for longer periods without charges, David Cole, professor at the Georgetown University Law Center, says the INS may be overstepping its boundaries.
The only setting in which it is permissible for INS to detain a non-citizen is if it shows that that non-citizen is charged with some sort of deportable offense or has a deportation order entered against him, and the government shows that the person is either a risk of flight, will flee within the United States, and so we won't be able to effectuate his removal, or that the person is a danger to the community. And if the government can't show either one of those, it's not allowed to just lock up foreign nationals. Unfortunately, that principle has been thrown out since September 11th, at least with this Justice Department and this INS.
The INS may have also overstepped its boundaries when it comes to material witnesses. Material witnesses are people who can provide tangible evidence during a trial. Material witness warrants are traditionally used to make sure that an important witness provides testimony. According to Allison Collins, who was associate director at the U.S. program at Human Rights Watch, the use of material witness warrants in the September 11th terrorism investigation is problematic.
There are so many questions about the material witness warrants and detentions because that has been kept especially secretive. It's unclear how they're material witnesses when there are no suspects charged in the crimes they allegedly are awaiting trial for. Material witnesses are supposed to be held so that they can be witnesses when a trial takes place. But when you don't have a suspect named or in custody or located and you hold somebody who you think might be helpful on some unknown date for prolonged periods and for at least months, and often the material witnesses were held in isolation, in conditions that were really awful in jails and in the INS's own facilities or in the federal facility in New York City. So there is a specific purpose for material witnesses being detained. I think that in this case, when they couldn't come up with any other way to hold somebody and they weren't an immigrant who would be kicked home and they weren't somebody they could peg any other kind of crime on, I think the material witness warrants and detentions really served a purpose for that gap in between those groups to hold on to people they thought might be of interest at some point.
In addition to civil liberties issues presented by the USA Patriot Act, there has been a series of changes to immigration law implemented by the U.S. Department of Justice that have far-reaching implications. In late September 2001, a memorandum was issued by Chief Immigration Judge Michael Crepy, instructing all immigration judges to close immigration court proceedings to the public, friends, family, and the press. Less than a year later, another rule was issued that instructed judges to seal court records. Again, Allison Collins.
Among the many rules issued by the Justice Department after September 11th in May of 2002, a new rule was issued that worked together with the Crepy Memorandum to seal court records without the government having to provide specific reasons for sealing those records. In other words, in a vague sense, all of those proceedings would be held in secret without a specific security or other concern having to be named before making the files secret. That, of course, together with the Crepy memo and just about everything that happened that came out of the Justice Department after September 11th was part of this pattern of secrecy, along with not disclosing names, closing hearings, sealing records. This is another piece of that effort to make sure the public couldn't learn more about how these proceedings were taking place.
Just how many people have been detained by the INS since September 11th? This is a question that no one, not even the INS, seems able to answer. Correspondent Adam Satanides spoke with INS press officer Bill Strasburger.
Do you have any idea how many have been detained by the INS since September 11th, 2001?
No, I sure don't.
Okay.
Yeah, it's our detention figures. We detain somewhere in the order of 18,000 to 20,000 persons on a regular basis.
With the rapid changes in immigration law, just what rights do immigrants in the United States have? And are these rights being upheld? Amr Jubran is a Palestinian refugee from Jordan. He was arrested on November 4th, 2002, on a technical immigration violation. But when he asked for an attorney...
At that point, the INS gentleman, whose name is David Atkins, said, if you do not cooperate, you will rot in jail. And you better start calling the Jordanian consulate because you're going to spend some time in jail and then we're going to deport you. In 2 weeks, you'll be out. And then the FBI came to say, no, you're going to spend 50 years in jail and you would rot in jail. And we can do that. I said, still, I need to have my right to speak to you in the presence of my attorney.
Amr Jubran says he was denied basic due process rights.
They tried, first of all, they never read me any of my rights. They never introduced themselves. They never presented warrants. They never presented even a notice to appear, which is a matter by INS. Normally, if they want to talk to you, they just send you a notice and you decide to show up with your lawyer, and you can discuss with them whatever is an outstanding issue. They have failed to submit any of these things to me.
After 17 days of detention, he was given a bond hearing.
Why is it different with Arabs and Muslims in this country right now? Why are we treated differently? We are all guilty until not proven innocent, but we are all guilty until proven so.
Farouk Abdelmouti was detained violently, also on a technicality. Abdelmouti has been detained for 9 months without a single charge being filed against him. In fact, although he was detained in April of 2002, his first meeting with an immigration judge was in January of 2003.
The first time I have, have the INS meeting is the last Tuesday with my judge, to talk about my case. And all this time, I am in this condition, no country, no place in the world, where I live in the United States was, some of the more developed countries in the world, and can happen to this. And when I see the condition, what I have, and I come in to review the history of the United States, it's similar to happen in 1943 against the American-Japanese community when it's put him in the jails for no reason and for no questions.
During his interrogation, after his initial arrest, the FBI threatened Farouk Abdelmouti as well. In his case, they told him they would turn him over to the Mossad, the intelligence arm of the Israeli government.
He say, if you not collaborate, you don't work with us, we're going to send you to Mossad. We'll let you to Mossad, the Israeli intelligence. He mentioned Mossad. And after that, hit me and threw me to the floor.
Abdelmouti was given rotten food.
The food you can even put in your mouth because the food got worms in the salad and the meat has got a smell. The dogs eat better and we are eating.
He was kept in squalid conditions.
The condition there for here was completely, the place is dirty. You have in each dorm about more than 60 people. It have leak. The ventilation is not working. The bathroom is not working. This is all jail,
And why are these detentions and roundups taking place?
People are critical of foreign policy like never before, evident by the millions who marched in the U.S. Against the war in Iraq. And they come and they use the INS at this point to as a tool to silence people. Of course, it's going to have a chilling effect.
While the U.S. government is currently targeting immigrants, the ramifications for citizens could be tremendous. Again, Amr Gibran.
What is significant here, and people must pay attention to, is that the U.S. government is using the immigrants of Arabic and Muslim descent as an excuse to introduce new laws and to set the precedent that we can come after people using the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security. We can come back and use the INS to strip people from their green cards. And you change the law and you accommodate it to suit your political agenda. Then later on, this becomes a legal reference, a point of reference to go ahead and silence any dissent anywhere, regardless of age, sex, or gender, or race. And it's going to be massive, and no one's going to protest it because it is the law.
For Making Contact, I'm Sarah Olson.
You are listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information about the subject of this week's program, or you would like to contact any of our guests, please give us a call. It's toll-free, 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. That's radioproject.org. Colleen Bartolone reports the INS has been trying to limit public scrutiny of the agency's handling of immigration cases that involve people of Arab descent.
The INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, has historically operated under veils of secrecy. You know, when the public can't have access to seeing and viewing what is being done in its name, you know, using its taxpayer money, then we can't really make informed choices as to whether or not this really is enhancing our security or not.
Heba Nimmer is from INS Watch, a project of La Raza Centro Legal that has been monitoring the INS since 1998. Nimmer says that the secret immigration proceedings of over 1,000 Middle Eastern immigrants at September 11th is just the newest phase of unjust and racist treatment of immigrants in the United States by the INS. The secret hearings of immigrants began just 2 weeks after September 11th, when INS Chief Judge Michael Crepy issued a memorandum ordering the closure of immigration proceedings of all special interest cases. Special interest cases evaluate involvement with terrorism and are not accessible to the public, including family members and the press. Lucy Dalglish of the Reporters Committee on Freedom of the Press has been following the case of the Detroit Free Press versus John Ashcroft. The Detroit Free Press and the Ann Arbor News sought to report on the secret immigration proceedings of Rabi Haddad, a high-profile case of a Lebanese man who was arrested for a visa violation. Haddad's case was labeled special interest because his organization, the Global Relief Foundation, was under investigation for funding terrorist groups abroad.
This was an enormous change in the way immigration deportation hearings have been handled in the past. And as a result of that, several organizations, including ours, tried in numerous ways to get access to that information. One of them was to file a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. under the Federal Freedom of Information Act to get access to the list of the names of the detainees. In other states, New Jersey and Michigan, news organizations and others, including the ACLU, filed lawsuits to get access to those hearings.
The Michigan American Civil Liberties Union and U.S. Representative John Conyers filed suit against Attorney General John Ashcroft for directing the INS judge to close special interest proceedings to the public. According to Herschel Fink, the lead counsel for the newspapers, closed proceedings only keep the public ignorant of treatment of immigrants.
When a proceeding is open, first of all, we know who the individual is who's the subject of the proceeding. And under the Crepy memorandum, even the name of the person who'd been arrested or rounded up or taken off the streets, he just disappeared in the middle of the night, literally. The government's argument, on the other hand, is that, well, we don't want to educate the terrorists. We don't want the terrorists to know that we're on to them and that we've arrested one of their operatives. And that we've detained this person. That's why we don't want to release the name of the individual. And that's kind of a, if you think about it, just a plain silly argument, because if the person who's been detained is in fact linked to terrorism, they know about it. They know what the evidence is because they're present and their lawyer is present during the proceeding. And they're certainly free to pass that information on to Al-Qaeda or to Hamas or whatever other terrorist organization they work for. So the only folks who are kept in the dark is the American public.
Lucy Dalglish agrees that the abolition of secret immigration hearings would protect immigrant rights by informing the public about the circumstances and consequences of immigrant deportations.
Certainly, we would know a lot more about families that have been broken up. And, I mean, I was just talking to a friend this morning in Minnesota who went to a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and there was a woman from Somalia who stood up at this meeting and said, you know, you guys deported my husband. This is my husband. My children and I are still here. Where is he? And somebody from the INS stood up and said, I'm sorry, we can't talk about that. I mean, that's what this is coming down to. Families are being broken up, and they don't even know where some of these folks are being shipped off to. And I think that, you know, this was too much. They went too far. And I don't think anybody at the Justice Department, which up until recently ran the Immigration and Naturalization Service, I think they were just completely insensitive to any argument that the public has a right to know what's going on.
Noel Sala of the Michigan ACLU is closely involved with the case of Detroit Free Press versus John Ashcroft. Sala says that the closed proceedings are a violation, not only of immigrant rights, but the public's.
Equally important is that the American public's rights were being violated by having a closed hearing. If the American public is not allowed to know what its government is doing and what types of charges are being made and how the U.S. government is handling the rights of any individual in this country, then it sets a very dangerous precedent that could be expanded to include U.S. citizens.
In August 2002, the Detroit Free Press scored a victory when the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled closed immigration proceedings unconstitutional. However, the Third Circuit judged them lawful in a New Jersey suit. The Detroit Free Press case was made well known when a Sixth Circuit judge was quoted as saying, "Democracy dies behind closed doors." It is now up to the Supreme Court to decide on the legality of secret immigration proceedings.
INS, FBI, no more detentions, no more lies. INS, FBI.
For the first time since September 11th, public outcry and media attention brought awareness to the INS's overall secret dealings with Middle Eastern immigrants. San Francisco public defender Jeff Adachi is one of thousands nationwide who demonstrated on January 10th, 2003. The protesters spoke out against INS detentions and a new special registration program that requires certain citizens or nationals of Arab countries to report to and register with the INS. Many call the results of these special registrations a modern-day version of Japanese internment camps.
Growing up, I never understood how my parents and my grandparents could be interned while fellow Americans watched, along with 120,000 other people. I never understood it until the events of the past couple years, when myself, I could see myself looking the other way.
In the first of three special registration deadlines, over 500 Iranian men were detained in Los Angeles in late December, sparking mass protest nationwide. In San Francisco, a Tunisian man named Mehdi said the special registration process made him angry and feel unwelcome in the U.S.
Stop the hate, stop the fear. We don't want no police state here.
We're here to object to the INS special registration policy and to the mass detentions that it's leading to.
Linda Sharif is from the Arab American Anti-Discrimination League. Sharif was part of the 40 organizations that organized in front of the San Francisco INS building. The groups also monitored special registrants entering the building in the week leading up to the second registration deadline to make sure they all came out.
We feel that the policy is racist. It's relying on stereotypes of Arabs and Muslims and people from the Middle East. And it's not an effective means of combating terrorism or crime or violence or anything else.
How does the INS justify the special registrations? In this interview conducted by correspondent Adam Satanides, INS Public Affairs Officer Bill Strasburger claims that the process is simply fulfilling a 1996 congressional mandate, but also happens to be an effective means of catching terrorists.
Why is the INS conducting the special registration program?
The special registration program is part of the overall national security entry-exit registration system, which is being put in place. Congress back in 1996 required that INS implement a comprehensive entry-exit system program, something that would keep track of people, temporary visitors to the United States, their arrival and their departure. It's something we really don't have in place currently. NSEERS, as we commonly refer to the registration system, is just the first step in us meeting that congressional mandate.
Obviously, you're familiar with the criticism that, that some people have said the process is unfair because Arab Americans are being, say, ethnically or racially profiled. Mm-hmm. Interviewed specifically about links to terrorism, how do you respond to this?
The countries that have been identified to start with the registration process are countries where Al-Qaeda or other terrorist organizations have been active, or they're countries where the United States has other national security concerns. You know, ultimately, this is not an exclusive list. Persons from other countries may be asked to register in the future. As a matter of fact, at this time, as of January 24th, individuals from 148 countries have been registered either at the port of entry or through the call-in registration at the district offices around the country. Ultimately, that's been a total of almost 87,000 registrations that have taken place.
That was Adam Satanides speaking with Bill Strasburger of the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Mark Vanderhot of the National Lawyers Guild has been working with INS detainees for over 15 years and asserts that immigrants' rights are being violated.
There's no justification whatsoever for many, many of the people who have been arrested. Many of the individuals who have been arrested have applications for permanent residency on file. The INS is already aware of them. They have permission to work. They're authorized to be ill. And there's no justification for their arrest whatsoever. Also, individuals who tried to comply with the law when they heard about the December 10th deadline and came in a day or two late saying, I didn't hear about this, were arrested and shipped to many parts of the country without reason whatsoever. But this is just one small piece of the picture here. This is part of the Bush administration's really attack on civil rights, and immigrants are the first target.
Again, Bill Strasburger of the INS.
Through the registration process, we have detained just under 1,300 people, generally for violations of immigration law. As of January 24th, 92 individuals were still in custody, a majority of those eligible to make bond and be released pending their hearing.
Our family's back! Immigrant rights under attack! We
Despite the INS's efforts, Shelja Patel of the Not In Our Name Project rejects the veil of secrecy that violates the public's right to know about immigrant detentions.
We refuse to have these people vanished from among us. We will remember who they are. We know their names. We know they exist. And we are calling for justice for them.
I'm Pauline Bartolone for Making Contact.
And that's it for this edition of Making Contact, a look at the INS and the so-called war on terrorism. Thanks for listening. If you'd like more information about the subject of this week's program, or you would like to get in touch with any of our guests, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. Call that same phone number for CD and cassette copies of this program. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org. That's radioproject.org. Making Contact is an independent production. We're committed to providing a forum for voices and opinions not often heard in the mass media. If you have suggestions for future programs, we'd love to hear from you. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Peggy Law, founding director, associate producer Amy Pomerlow, office manager Rosalind Fay, associate manager Susanna Hines, senior advisor Norman Solomon, national producer David Barsamian, and I'm your host and managing producer Philip Babich. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. Until next time.